Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Monday, July 1st. Currently 57 degrees here in Old Town Park City, reporting 62 degrees in the Heber Valley. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, Nate Larson. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Leslie. Good morning, Park City and Heber. Yeah, we are looking at a little bit of cloud cover moving in through northern Utah along a front that's fizzling out. It is going to bring some relief to some of the hotter temperatures that we had over the weekend. So a nice change there. A mix of sun and clouds then for Park City, looking at just a 10 to 15% chance of a stray shower or thunderstorm as this moisture continues to move through northern Utah. Looking at temperatures in the mid-70s for highs then. Heber will see temperatures in the mid-80s. As we get into Tuesday, we'll see northwest flow take over, keeping our daytime highs a little cooler than normal, if not comfortable at 75 in Park City after overnight lows in the upper 40s. We'll see similar temperatures overnight in Heber, but 84 for the high tomorrow. And then as we get towards the rest of the week, we'll continue to see a few weak disturbances brush by the Beehive State to the east of us. It should help moderate temperature some, so we're looking at upper 70s again on Wednesday. A high of 77 for Independence Day. Looks really nice on Thursday. Fairly light winds up in Park City for Thursday as well. Should be great if we've got firework displays or drone displays, whatever we're going to be out doing to celebrate our independence. Temperatures climbing, though, towards the end of the week and throughout the weekend. High pressure will start to build back in, ramping up those daytime highs to 80 degrees on Friday with sunshine. More sunshine this weekend. Temperatures in the mid-80s for Park City with a high of 84 on Saturday, 86 on Sunday. Heber looking at little change in temperatures through Friday will be those mid to upper 80s for daytime highs with sunshine throughout Wednesday through Friday. Sunny skies with high pressure over the weekend and temperatures climbing into the low to mid 90s on Saturday and Sunday as well.
Okay. Hey, thanks, Nate.
You bet.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Summit County Jail Commander John Evans, along with Sergeant Christina De La Cruz. She started the Motiversity program. They'll have details about the success of that. Park City Ski and Snowboard Director of Operations Jackie Wilkerson, along with Kathy Burke and Cole Sport, explain how to participate in this year's 4th of July 5K Fun Run. And Park City Friends of Library members Rachel Salmon and Kathy Lanigan have details about this week's two-day used book sale. Taking a look at some local news now, Vice President Kamala Harris made a campaign stop in Park City after the first presidential debate of the 2024 election last week. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports that she doubled down on her faith in Joe Biden's ability to win this November.
Attendee Lisa Gray told KPCW she came to the campaign fundraiser, quote, distraught after Biden's debate performance facing President Donald Trump June 27th. But she said Harris reassured her at the event, which was held in the Colony the afternoon of June 28th. Harris only briefly addressed the debate, saying the current president had, quote, a slow start, but a good finish. The president said that this was not his finest moment in terms of the debate, Harris told the crowd of Utah donors, adding, quote, he's a great and intelligent and profound thinker. It's the same line she took in a post-debate interview with ABC News, where she also added that the election shouldn't be decided on the basis of a single debate. During the debate, the 81-year-old president's speech was raspy and halting, and at times he appeared to lose his train of thought. That's raised eyebrows among Democrats and political pundits, some of whom are now questioning whether he should step aside. While the June 28th fundraiser was underway, the New York Times editorial board called on Biden to drop out too, but Harris reaffirmed her faith in their ticket. "We're gonna win," she said, to cheers from the crowd of Utah donors. The fundraiser's hosts said people rallied around the campaign the night of the debate. They said, quote, our phones rang off the hook with people asking, can we still donate? Can we still come tomorrow? Harris's speech listed the Biden administration's accomplishments. She says they invested over $1 trillion in infrastructure and capped insulin prices, and she promised to fight for women's reproductive rights. She said Biden approaches his job with care and concern, contrasting that with Trump, who she says coddles dictators, wants to weaponize the DOJ, and attack abortion. The vice president took the mic just after 5 p.m. after several minutes' delay. Her husband, Second Gentleman Doug Emhoff, took his planned remarks long to fill the time. He said he was proud of his wife's record as a prosecutor, senator, and now vice president. He said, quote, I know it sounds hyperbolic, but it's not. This is a binary election. Do you want freedom or do you not? Around 200 people were booked to attend, according to caterers. Alex Shapiro, executive director of the United Jewish Federation of Utah, said he was part of a delegation selected to discuss anti-Semitism with Emhoff, who is himself Jewish. Shapiro and a few other Jewish leaders got 45 minutes with the Second Gentleman before his and Harris's speeches. Shapiro said Imhoff was receptive to their concerns, and Shapiro thinks both he and Imhoff are exhausted by what he sees as a recent rise in hate. The vice president's Utah stop marks the third time President Joe Biden's reelection has appeared in the state over the past year. Biden himself was in Park City to fundraise August of 2023, and First Lady Jill Biden made a stop over here in January to meet with donors and visit a Salt Lake City high school. In 2020, just 38% of Utah voters backed Biden in the election, while Trump won the state with 58% of support. Federal Elections Commission data shows that during this election cycle, Utahns have donated more than $1 million to Biden's reelection campaign. ABC News will host the second debate Tuesday, September 10th at 7 p.m. Mountain Time. The location hasn't been announced. The general election is November 5th. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Well, just over a year ago, Summit County Sheriff Sergeant Christina De La Cruz started a program called Motiversity. She joins me along with the county's jail commander, John Evans. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Good morning.
So, Sergeant, why don't you start by telling us what Motiversity is?
So it started from an inmate coming to me wanting more programming. And we kind of developed this program where we watch motivational videos that we get off of YouTube, like TED Talks and things like that. And then the class has a discussion about what they liked from those videos, what they got out of them. It's a 12-week program. And after 12 weeks, the inmates have to complete an essay of basically what they learned in the class throughout the 12 weeks and what their life could be like in 3 to 5 years if they were to make changes for the better and continue on the path that they're on.
Okay, so somebody came to you and you decided to put together kind of the step-by-step 12 weeks?
Yeah, mm-hmm. So when he came to me, he wanted to create a program where, because he was a state inmate, where he could inspire county inmates to not make the same mistakes that led him to get into prison. So that's kind of how it formulated.
All right, so how are the weeks broken down? I mean, is it, you know, week one you do something and then week two is it something different, or are there just whatever videos you find
so
that you put together?
It's whatever videos I can find and put together, but also one of the great things about Motiversity is we have guest speakers that can come. So I reach out to these people and have them come and speak to the inmates. A lot of them have been incarcerated previously, so it's a way to show them that there is life after prison or jail, that you can be successful and not come back. You don't have to keep reoffending or have that criminal mindset.
All right. So who are some of those guests that you have brought to the program?
So we had Ryan Leaf, who is a former NFL quarterback. He Zoomed in, and that was a really inspirational one. We have had Gary Fisher, the executive director of the Cirque Lodge, Tyler Hansen, Damian Trujillo, the Mark Hagentobler, who's been over, his podcast is All My Friends Are Felons.
Okay, I don't know any of those names, but I mean, who's Tyler Hansen?
So he is on the board of directors of the Utah Harm Reduction Coalition. And like Dave Drosher is the executive director of the Other Side Academy.
Okay, and so you were saying that these guest speakers have been in jail themselves?
Yes, so they've been formally incarcerated and then have made it out and been extremely successful in life. So we have them come and speak to the inmates and tell them their story. Because I feel like in corrections, a lot of it is, like, the recidivism rate is pretty high, and a lot of it is them seeing other inmates get out and then come back and get out and come back. So this was a way to show them, look, there's success stories out there, and you can get out and make something of yourself and be successful in life.
Mm-hmm. So what is that, the recidivism? I mean, it's, again, going to jail, getting out, getting, you know, doing bad stuff again and getting put back into jail. I mean, can you talk to that, us a little
the
bit
recidivism,
about jail? I mean, why does that happen? Because they don't have any life outside of jail?
A lot of it is their history of growing up. A lot of them don't have a chance. They come from single families, or their moms and dads are also incarcerated. And so they don't know any of their life. This program, it gives them hope that somebody's been in their shoes and they can get out and stay out. They don't have to get in that revolving door of the correction system. So that's what I love about it, is that word hope. If you give somebody hope, it can go 1,000 miles for them.
Yeah. So are all inmates, John, eligible to participate in this?
Every inmate in our facility, yes, is eligible. Also, the state prison has picked it up. When Ryan Lee spoke, we Zoomed it with the prison, and there were probably about 100 people listening to it as well. And so it's been very successful on our end.
Okay. So they don't need to do anything special other than just put their name on the list about joining the next program.
When it's announced in the housing sections, they just got to come to the program. Nobody's forced. It's all voluntary.
Okay. And then, Christina, so you just do one after another?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We usually do like one class a week.
Yeah. And then the class is what, about an hour long?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
About 30 minutes to an hour. It just depends on the video that we show and any questions or things that come up that we talk about.
Okay. So, as you mentioned, the Utah State Prison has kind of adopted it as well as a couple of other jails. I probably wish you would have franchised it or something.
No, the ultimate goal for me with Motiversity is to get it in every jail. I feel like the more that people are hearing stories and seeing change in other people, it's going to help change them and, like he said, give hope.
Okay. Well, luckily I've never been in jail, so I don't keep it that way. But I mean, so what happens day to day in jail? I mean, do they just sit in cells and go and eat food and then maybe go outside for a little bit of exercise and
At our jail, we have a lot of programming. It's all voluntary. They don't have to do the programming, but myself and Chief Bates, when she was jail commander, are real big on new stuff coming in the jail for program. We got yoga, Motiversity, the University of Utah. They're our mental health provider. They have numerous classes. They also have one-on-one therapy sessions with therapists that come in. So we give them the tools. What they do with those tools is up to them. There's a lot of stuff to do in our jail.
Oh, okay. So tell me, in terms of how many, you've been doing it a year, so you've got how many graduated?
It started in August of last year. We've had 147 participants. Of them, we've had 25 graduates, and 10 of those 25 have been successful in their probation and parole and haven't reoffended. And 13 of them are still incarcerated and continue to come to the program. We've only had two that have parole, that have violated their parole, that have graduated Motiversity.
Okay, and they welcome to take it as many times as they want?
Yeah, so that's the great thing is once they graduate, it's not a done deal thing. They can continue coming. You can always continue to get motivation and encouragement and inspiration as you come to each class. And one of the great things about once you graduate Motiversity is it gives you an opportunity to be a candidate for a program that we have that's called the Real Testament. And in the Real Testament, we have a panel of about 5 inmates that tell their stories to the public. We've had youth groups and higher ups from the prison come. We've done the Citizens Academy. It's just a really great opportunity for them to turn their pain into purpose.
All right. So tell me a little bit, I mean, so the state then came and kind of watched how mm-hmm. this was happening?
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about that and how they got interested and started their own program?
I made a phone call to his name's Director Honey. He's over the inmate placement. He was over the inmate placement program mm-hmm. with the state inmates, and kind of told them what our new program was, a Real Testament. And we had a youth group coming in that night, and he came and listened. And it's earth shattering to hear them tell their story, and they want other people to learn from their mistakes so they don't have to make those same mistakes and not to go down that path that they're heading down that path.
Yeah, so it sounds like that's pretty powerful part of the program.
It's
yeah.
very mm-hmm. powerful. And these inmates, there's one that's been in 18 years, and he just wants to tell a story so people don't go down his same path and his life's choices.
Okay. All right, anything else you want to tell us about the program?
No, just that if anybody is interested in listening to these inmates tell their stories, then to reach out to us. And we can set that up.
Okay, how would they reach you?
Through email or just...
They can email me, jevans@summitcounty.org, and okay. I can get in contact with Sergeant Cruz.
Okay, and then who's your guest? I heard you've got somebody else coming, guest speaker in August. Who's that going to be?
Yeah, so we have Julio Almanza. He had been formerly incarcerated in the Mexican prison for 4 years. So he's going to come and speak to us. He currently lives in Arizona, and he's going to fly down here. And none of this is charging any of the county or costing it. How do you say that? None of it costs the county anything. Everything is just...
they volunteer their time to come speak to the inmates.
Yeah.
Okay. So. All right. Well, congratulations. Sounds like you've done a great job.
Thank you.
Okay. That's Summit County Sergeant Christina De La Cruz along with Jail Commander John Evans. Park City is adding a trail in Snow Park for e-mountain bikers. KPCW's Parker Malatesta reports on the Split City Council decision.
E-mountain bikes are currently banned on Park City single track unless riders are 65 and older or have a mobility disability. Clark Ranch near U.S. Highway 40, which has around 5 miles of trails, is the only area in city limits where people can use a Class 1 e-mountain bike outside of those restrictions. To cater to the growing popularity, a majority of the Park City Council moved Friday to create a new e-mountain bike trail that will start in Snow Park and connect over to Deer Valley's new East Village base in Wasatch County. Park City Trails and Open Space Manager Heinrich Dieters said they worked with Deer Valley Resort to create the route on private land. Mountain Trails Foundation Executive Director Laura Anthony expressed concerns about e-mountain bike use spreading to the overall Park City Trail network. She said East Village will have 50 miles of e-mountain bike-friendly trails that the city should direct people to use.
That's actually going to connect to the rest of the Wasatch County trail system through the state park, which then turns that 50 miles into 500 miles. Yep. So to say that there's a shortage of e-bike-friendly terrain in our neck of the woods is just not true.
Snyderville Basin resident Ryan Goff works as an engineer in the bike industry. During public comment, Goff told the council e-mountain bikes are only going to continue to grow.
I've watched e-mountain bikes go from, quite honestly, sort of a mad scientist sideshow to not just mainstream, but within our brand, a business priority, and even starting to outsell their equivalent acoustic classic mountain bikes. Yes, today the share of riders on these is small, but that's changing, and it's changing quickly.
However, other area residents express worries about increased crowding on trails and the dangers presented by e-mountain bikes. Councilmember Jeremy Rubel, who was supportive of trying the new trail, said the city may need to evolve.
I am a little bit concerned about falling behind a technology, right, and limiting our user classes. And I'm just as concerned about slamming in a technology that we don't quite understand. So what's the balance? And this feels like actually a pretty good balance to me.
Council members Ed Parisian and Bill Sirocco were also in favor of the pilot project. Council member Ryan Dickey was ardently against the proposal and said it creates a slippery slope.
And so when I look at trails holistically, instead of thinking about e-bikes, and I ask the question, do I want to add an entirely new user group that's potentially much larger than the analog mountain bike community to our existing trails? I think our trail users say no, there's no purpose to that. And so I don't feel like I need to go test that.
Councilmember Tana Tully was also against the measure, citing safety concerns for hikers and trail runners. It's unclear when the new e-mountain bike trail will be ready for riders. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
Hi, I'm Mitchell Burns, Chief Operating Officer of Red Ledges, a proud supporter of KPCW. Red Ledges is located minutes from Park City and 12 miles from skiing at the Jordanelle Gondola at Deer Valley. Our club offers golf, tennis, 7-plus miles of trails, a water park, an equestrian center, plus events and activities for the whole family. Learn more about the lifestyle at redledges.com.
Well, it'll be a family affair in more ways than one at Heber Valley's popular Fiddler on the Roof performance. KPCW's Amber Johnson has the story.
Fiddler on the Roof centers around family and traditions, so it's only appropriate that three generations of the Higley family are starring in the High Valley Arts production July 5th through 20th in Midway. The story follows a Jewish peasant named Tevye and his wife Golda in pre-revolutionary Russia as their traditions are challenged by their daughters. Kara Charlesworth will play Golda, her daughter Lila will be the youngest daughter, Bielka, while her mother Vicky Higley will play a villager. Charlesworth said this is the first time she was able to convince her 69-year-old mom to join her on stage.
this was the perfect opportunity because I grew up watching Fiddler on the Roof on our VHS. She showed it to me when I was little, and it's her favorite musical. And I'm like, well, what better way to start doing musicals than to be in your favorite musical?
Higley said learning to act has been a really fun challenge that yanked her way out of her comfort zone.
I didn't realize how much they were required to learn. I mean, I knew script, choreography, and learning lines and things like that, but there's still so much to learn. Getting it put together at the right time, and just there's a lot going on.
But she's confident she'll nail her line.
I have a little solo in a song. I say two words.
Okay, so give us those words.
Why not? I got it down, right?
10-year-old Lila loves performing with Rise Up Children's Choir in Orem and already has a list of local community productions like Aladdin and Beauty and the Beast in her repertoire.
This is my first time doing it with my grandma and mom. It's special because we get to do a lot and we're all together, like, enjoying this moment.
You can see Golda's Gang perform at the High Valley Arts Outdoor Theater at 8 p.m. Tickets start at $10 for kids and $14 for adults. Sunrise, Sunset is one of the musical's acclaimed songs, and Charlesworth said performing on the outdoor stage is something special.
It's so fun to just be out there with the beautiful backdrop of the mountains, and it's just like at the prettiest time of day where the sun's just about to go down, and it's peaceful, and it's just beautiful, and I just love being out in nature and acting, doing what I love.
And doing it beside two people who are among those she loves the most. Amber Johnson, KPCW News.
Registration underway for the annual 4th of July 5K fun run to benefit Park City Ski and Snowboard. In the studio with details, I have the operations director for Park City Ski and Snowboard, Jackie Wilkerson, along with Kathy Burke, apparel buyer for Kohl's Sport and lead organizer of the annual 5K fun run. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, Jackie, maybe just start with you and get the details. Of course, we know it's 4th of July, but when, where, and how much?
Yeah, so we are at Kohl's Sport again for the 40th anniversary of the 5K fun run. Registration is open. Early pickup is underway. And the run itself is on Thursday, kicks off at 8 o'clock. You can still come pick up your bib between 6:30 and 7:30 a.m., and it's bound to be a good time.
Okay, and so where is the pickup? At Kohl's Sport?
At Kohl's Sport, yes.
We put a tent up yesterday. We're there from 10 to 5 every day. We had several people come yesterday and pick up their bibs. Registration is on runnercard.com, so you don't come to register at Kohl's Sport. You just register online and pick up your bib and T-shirt anytime between now and the evening of the 3rd. Oh. And registration costs, the fees are $50 for an adult, $30 for children 11 and under. We have a baby jogger category, which people like. And new this year, we have a new category because this town is quite competitive. And the age group used to be 70 to 99. So people requested we break up the 70-year-old category. So it's 70 to 79. And there's a lot of competitive runners in that age group in this town, and then it goes 80 and above, basically.
Okay, all right, that was nice of you to do that. I mentioned T-shirts come with the registration, and it's been years past, you've had one of the athletes design it. Is that what you've done this year as well?
We did not do that this year, but we have done that in the past, and
people are loving the shirts.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're on display at Kohl's Sport right now, so they look great.
All right, and then, not only is this a tradition for the last 40 years from 4th of July, it's also a big fundraiser for the club. I mean, that's why you do it.
Yes, absolutely. So we need to close the gap between our tuition costs and our expenses, and so we do a lot of fundraising to help our athletes stay in sport at as low of a cost as humanly possible, and so this is one of our big fundraisers for the year.
And I know you get a bunch of people. Kathy, how many registered?
Yeah, so as of last evening, we were over 500 at the end of the night, and we are expecting to cap out at 1,000 this year. We had the second highest, as of today, the second highest registration on record. So we topped out at 1,007 a couple years ago, and so we're right on target to hit 1,000, which is our cutoff.
Okay, and so the race does start from Kohl's Sport?
It starts from Kohl's Sport. You can park your cars if you're driving at the lower lot at Park City Mountain Resort, and then walk down to Colesport to get your bib at day of. And you walk up the street like you're going back up to the resort, and it starts on Silver King Drive, which is your next right. So there'll be, you'll see that the timing people will be there, and with 1,000 people, you won't be able to miss it.
All right, and there's a bus stop right out.
Yes, people can take the bus, they can ride their bikes. We're encouraging all sustainable transportation, whatever they can do to minimize traffic, because it's a busy day.
All right, and then after the races, you do awards.
We have awards in the parking lot. We have several sponsors. We just like to make a call out. So Colesport, of course, and Industrial Supply have been the founding sponsors since 1984. Both local families, which is really nice. Colesport's now on its second generation of owners, and Industrial Supply, Jessica Thompson, is the fourth generation, which is amazing.
Oh, wow. Sure is.
And then we do have other sponsors, Solomon Footwear, Silver King Coffee, local sponsors that have been with us forever, Jim Clifford, and then Cetus is a new sponsor that is custom footbeds, and they're going to be there with a company, their company trailer that has the ability to make footbeds in the trailer. So if people are interested in running insoles or ski insoles, we have the ability to make those for people during that time, or just to look at the process.
All right. Any Park City Ski and Snowboard alumni that are going to run this year that you can tell us about?
Oh, I'm sure.
Adam Cole will be there.
Okay.
And yeah, we should have quite the crew of alum coming in to participate and compete with each other as always.
Okay. And again, people will be done well before the parade starts.
Usually we wrap up about 9:30 after awards are all finished. By 10 o'clock, there's no one there, basically. They're all getting ready for the parade and meandering up to Main Street at that point.
And you've got an outfit to wear. Just wear
your
T-shirt.
Absolutely.
All right. And Kathy, I think you've been organizing this from the near beginning, huh?
I think like 30 years, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, I mean, when you talk about 1,000, that's, you know, that's all you can take.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we're working very closely now with the city, and that's their request to basically cap out 1,000, mitigate traffic if we can. And there's so much going on in this town during the 4th that we try to just be a little under the radar for them and not really cause a lot of commotion. We will have IHC is coming, yep. Something special this year, if you want to talk about that, Jackie.
Yeah, so IHC will be with us as a sponsor, and they're going to be doing a dynamic warm-up with one of their PTs at Colesport, where you can pick up your bib, and they'll also have cooling towels at the end of the race to make sure everybody stays within temperature.
Okay, and the course pretty much, has it always been through kind of the Thanes?
Yes, it's
Canyon.
An out and back through Thanes, 5K, 3.1 miles. It is called a fun run, and we ask runners who are more competitive get to the front of the line, and those that are just doing it on a casual basis kind of stay to the back. So there's not, as everyone crosses the line, it's not a big commotion. So if you have small children or pushing a baby jogger, we ask that you try to kind of lean towards the back of the bunch.
Okay, and Jackie, in terms of just the team itself, the team, you know, one team but several different disciplines, busy with dry land and on snow camps and...
Super busy, yep. We have had a big start to the summer. Our moguls team just got back from Austria. We have a snowboard team at Mount Hood. Our moguls team is also headed back to Mount Hood with our free ski team, and then we'll have Alpine going to Germany to ski in the indoor, and then Chile in August. So we're all over the map right now and very busy with dry land at home as well.
Okay. Anything else, ladies?
Yeah, July is also a super busy month for PCSS. So not only do we have the 4th of July 5K, but on July 13th, we have our second Moose on the Loose race for kids age 3 to 14. And on July 20th, we are hosting the Springer Tourney, which is one of the biggest ski jumping competitions in North America, at the Utah Olympic Park. So from 5:30 to 8:30 on the 20th, there will be food trucks, ski jumping competition, offset beer will be there. So if you want information on that, check out our website, parkcityss.org, and come see all that we have to offer.
Okay. Jackie, Kathy, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Leslie.
Thank you.
Taking a look now at local news, conversations about growth and development dominate Wasatch back politics. As KPCW's Connor Thomas reports, Summit County's population did not grow the past 2 years. It actually shrunk. Here's that report.
United States Census Bureau data shows Summit County's population fell by 134 people in 2022, then by over double that in 2023. Summit County Housing and Economic Development Director Jeff Jones presented the stats to the Summit County Council on June 26th.
But if you were to ask that question of a resident, well, they would probably tell you that we've been growing like crazy.
Utah overall is growing. The University of Utah's Kim C. Gardner Policy Institute expects the population to double by 2060. Utah County and southwestern Utah are the fastest growing areas, and Heber City was formerly the country's fastest growing micropolitan area, which is a population area with between 10,000 and 50,000 residents. When it comes to Summit County, Jones says his staff hasn't yet studied why it might be shrinking.
And is it universal? Are we losing population just in the basin? Are we losing population in eastern Summit County? If we're experiencing losses, where are those losses coming from and for what reason?
Jones' stats showed Summit County was growing prior to 2022, peaking in 2021 with an increase of 690 residents. From 2019 to 2023, the county added an average of 407 new residences annually, but the entire time, the Park City School District's enrollment was shrinking. The Kim C. Gardner Policy Institute estimates Summit County added over 1,000 short-term rentals in the past 2 years. And except for 2020, jobs have been growing steadily since 2019. The county is currently hovering at around 43,000 people. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
And the Alfangen Ski Museum Foundation is making room for new Ski Hall of Fame inductees. KPCW's Christine Weller has more on those remodeling plans.
The Alfangen Ski Museum Foundation oversees the Alfangen Ski Museum and the George S. and Dolores Dore Eccles 2002 Olympic and Paralympic Winter Games Museum at the Utah Olympic Park. The foundation aims to preserve skiing history in the Intermountain region. New executive director Annie Baumer said the museums are running out of space. She said about 500,000 people visit the museums each year, and Baumer and her team have been raising funds to remodel parts of the museum.
We're redoing the Intermountain Ski Hall of Fame and kind of modernizing it and making room for additional people.
The remodel will include work on the entrance to the Hall of Fame, which will add space to make exhibits bigger and more interactive. The extra space will also accommodate 57 more plaques over the next 10 to 15 years, Baumer said. Construction starts July 8th and is expected to be completed by mid-August in time for three new inductees to be added. This year's inductees are Steve Benoose, the former executive director and coach of the Snowbird Sports Education Foundation, Raylan Davis, Ski Utah's vice president of marketing, and Bob Wheaton, the former president of Deer Valley Resort. The team is also working to get climate-controlled cases for the Barbara Ali Simon Fashion Collection to better preserve and showcase the display. Baumer said the foundation has plans to further expand.
With the possibility of the Olympics coming, we're going to need a whole lot more room, so we're looking at that as our goal to really expand everything.
She said her team is looking at ways to include contemporary history at the museum ahead of the 2034 Winter Olympics. If Utah is awarded the 2034 Games, the foundation wants to expand the Olympic Museum to tell the 2002 Olympic story as well as the 2034 Olympic story. Utah is expected to be awarded the 2034 Games on July 24th, Pioneer Day. Park City is organizing a party for the announcement in collaboration with Summit County, the Park City Chamber, and Utah Olympic Park. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
The Friends of the Park City Library used book sale will be held for 2 days this week in the studio with details. I have two members of the Friends, Rachel Solomon and Kathy Lanigan. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Rachel, you want to start and just, I mean, usually it's a day long, but you've decided to go ahead and do it 2 days?
We're doing 2 days, July 4th and 5th. We have an extended member preview this year, so that's going to be from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. So those who are Friends of the Library members can come and get first dibs on books. For the general public, the sale is from 10 to 4 on both days. And our final day on July 5th, for the last 2 hours from 2 to 4, for $15, you can get a free tote bag or included tote bag and as many books as you can put in that tote bag for $15. So that's kind of a special at the end of the sale.
Okay. The library itself is closed on the 4th, so you're not in the library?
We are up in the community room this year, which is a little different. In the past couple sales, we've been spread out a little bit across the library. This time we will be in the community room. for all of the adult books, and the kids books will be, is it 301, Kathy? And 301. Lucky Ones will be open as well, so we can have the sale and some coffee.
And the air conditioning will be on, so yes. Come in and cool down.
All right. And again, it's free to come in unless you want to come in those first 2 hours.
Yes. Yes, for sure. And people seem to love to come in. We get a big wave after the parade. Everybody walks down from Main Street down to Park Avenue and right into the library. So so that's also a great time to come and put it into your parade plans.
All right. To get in those first 2 hours before the parade, though, Kathy, you have to be a member. You check memberships at the door. People can purchase one there as well?
All of the above, yes. You can buy your membership today on our website, or you can show up day of and buy it right there. We take cash, checks, credit cards, Venmo.
Okay.
So yes, exactly. You can buy it day of, or you can do it in advance, but you have to have a membership.
And
to
the
go.
Cost of that is what?
Minimum $25.
All right. And in terms of the number of books, any idea how many you've got?
We will be full. All the tables will be full. There will be boxes full under the tables. We have tons of books. This is such a generous community. We have been receiving, I would say, 3 or 4 boxes of books almost daily for the last couple of months. So we expect to have a remarkably full sale this year.
All right. And it used to be once a year, mm-hmm. And you've kind of gone to now, what, 3 sales a year? Is that still the plan?
We
doing
have
another
been,
one on Miner's Day? Or
exactly. It used to be every Labor Day only. We have run out of storage space because of the community's generosity with book donations. We simply can't have one a year and continue to store the books. So we started just trying different formulas. Is it 2 sales a year? Is it, you know, 3 sales a year? Honestly, since COVID, we've been reinventing it and trying to figure out the best formula. It's now, we're going to stick with 2 a year, which will be 4th of July and Labor Day.
Ah, okay. So no more in the Winterfest there.
No, we have run into too many weather-related problems with that.
All right. And I guess I'm surprised by that. I mean, with kind of the advent of digital books, I was thinking, oh, this is the end of the used book sales. Not the case, huh?
Not the case. In fact, independent bookstores are showing increased sales all over the country. So we're only a small part of that. But no, physical books are absolutely still a hot item. So,
all right. And you can't be beat in terms of prices. How are you guys pricing them again? Similar?
So all children's books are $1. Adult paperback are $2, and adult hardback are $3.
Okay, so that's a little bit of a price increase, yeah?
No? Only for the adult hardbacks. That's the only increase. Our bag sale is the same. And the prices prior to this had not gone up in almost 20 years.
Oh.
I think we're really looking at the increasing costs for the library as well. So if we can add a little bit to each of the adult books, it just increases our ability to support library programs.
Because that's exactly what happens.
Yes.
It just basically goes revolving door back into the library.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How much do you hope to raise through this sale?
We'll be grateful for anything, but we're hoping to raise somewhere in the neighborhood of $4,000, yeah, is what we're hoping.
Awesome. Tell us about some of the things that the Friends donations have purchased for Park City Library over the last year.
Oh, it's so fun to talk about this. You know, this is a really unique resource for this community. Everything from the sled library, so in the winter, patrons can go in and take out a sled. We have all kinds of summer toys that can be used and checked out. We have maps of the parks, so if you're headed out on vacation, you can check out the maps. This library is really unique. It's got a 3D printer, and if you have a Park City Library card, you can go in and do 3D printing. We have a business center that the Friends have been supporting with materials, so if you're working on a project and you need a stapler and a hole puncher and some paper clips, we provide that. Pens. So the range is pretty big. They also have a telescope you can check out. They have gardening tools. And the Friends also help. Right now, a big thing we're supporting is graphic novels and ebooks, expanding those collections.
All right. And I know you also helped put on the music in the summer on the
music,
patio.
Yeah, music on the patio and the flowers on the deck there. So.
So anything on the wish list from the library for this year that you're aware of?
I am not aware of anything specific. There's a lot of ongoing programs like professional development. The staff and administration over at the library, often the friends are the ones supporting their trips to continuing education for them, professional development. I know that's coming up again. Mm-hmm.
All right. And I know not only do you have the two sales a year, but you also have the Friends Corner there as people just walk in.
Yeah.
Tell us, what is it that you guys put out there?
We put out a wide variety of books, and it kind of depends on what's been donated that week. Whatever comes in, we kind of sort through and try to maintain a really good variety out there of nonfiction, cooking, children's books, magazines, and of course, fiction. And the best-selling stuff tends to be the paperback fiction. That tends to disappear by 24 hours after we put it out. So.
Yeah, interesting. And you've made it really easy for us. You've got the cash box, I know, but you also let people Venmo now.
Absolutely.
Okay. And you've done away with the Friends annual author luncheon. I guess it really didn't become much of a fundraiser just because of the costs involved.
That's absolutely at the heart of it. But honestly, we had to stop it during COVID. Mm-hmm. We are really excited, though, because we're in the process of reinventing it as something new. To be announced. Details to come. But we're hard at work now on replacing it with a different kind of members event. So,
okay. And again, people can purchase their memberships now, and what's the website?
So if they go to parkcitylibrary.org/support, they can go credit card that way, or if they go into the library, there are QR codes that'll take you right to the website as well. So super easy to purchase memberships prior to, and then again, we will have somebody right at the front door at 8 o'clock on July 4th if folks would like to purchase a membership the day of the sale.
Okay. Maybe talk briefly about parking, because it is not parking for parade goers.
Exactly. Our volunteers will have a special pass, but patrons, really, I encourage people to think about the Park City Mountain Base. That's usually where I park. It's an easy walk down those stairs. The other parking, I think, is paid and a fairly long walk. But the bus goes right to the library, so please consider Park City Bus System.
Okay. Again, that's happening Thursday, Friday, and the member sales 8 to 10 on the 4th of July there.
Exactly.
Otherwise, 10 to 4.
Yes.
All right. Ladies, thanks.
Thank you.
Well, at Deer Valley's first Mountain Pride event on Sunday, attendees enjoy music and mountain biking at the Silver Lake Lodge. KPCW's Grace Dorfler stopped by and has this report.
The resort's inaugural LGBTQ Pride event June 30th featured outdoor activities for all to enjoy, from yoga and music to hiking and biking. There were also booths from Encircle, a resource for LGBTQ youth and young adults with a community home in Heber, Summit Pride, formerly the Park City LGBTQ Task Force, which advocates for queer inclusion in the Wasatch Back, and Deer Valley, which pledged to donate 30% of lift ticket sales from the day to Summit Pride. Summit Pride member EJ Elliott says she values the new Pride event because it gives LGBTQ people and allies a chance to connect, especially because such opportunities are less common outside big cities.
It's really important in these smaller towns that, you know, we make it known that even if you live outside of a city, your identity and who you are is not something to be ashamed of.
Kelly Vickers came to the event with her wife and son, a rainbow flag tucked into her bike helmet. Like Elliott, she says Pride events in small towns make a big difference.
Park City is very open, and we feel really proud to live here in this community, but having this here in Park City rather than going down to Salt Lake is really neat for our family, and I think it's important for everyone in the community.
And Alex Schimmen and Jackson Wigley say they enjoyed the day of soaking up the sun on the mountain and meeting new people. Here's Wigley.
The great music has been the best part, and also seeing members of the community show up and just getting to meet other fellow gay Utahn.
Deer Valley's Mountain Pride Day ran from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Sunday. Pride Month is celebrated every June to commemorate queer activists in history and promote LGBTQ people's full inclusion in their communities. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Park City Transit is starting a new bus route today. KPCW's Parker Malatesta has details.
The new 2010 bus route will provide residents in Upper Park Meadows and Royal Street with access to the Park City Transit Network. The route starts at the Park City Mark and runs to Upper Park Meadows, down State Route 224 to the Park City Mountain Base. The route continues to Old Town Transit Center, Deer Valley Snow Park Base, and then up Royal Street to Silver Lake. Buses will run on a two-hour frequency beginning shortly after 8 a.m. and ending around 5 p.m. each day. Park City previously tried Micro Transit, which operates as a free ride-hailing service in the two areas. The City Council cut Micro Transit in April, opting to instead create new bus routes. The map and route schedule for the new 2010 bus, which begins Monday, July 1st, can be found at kpcw.org. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
A Park City couple recently tied the knot in Old Town, but there was one thing missing from the ceremony: their wedding rings. KPCW's Christine Weller reports the couple wants Park City's help finding their lost wedding bands.
On the morning of Melissa Channel's June 22nd wedding, she was rushing around the Marriott's Summit Watch, getting ready to take pictures with her husband-to-be, Colin Watkins. She asked one of her bridesmaids if they should bring the wedding rings for the pictures.
And then chaos kind of happened,
Channel said, who now uses her husband's last name. At 2 p.m., the wedding party was on the Town Lift Bridge taking bridal pictures, including the special first look moment and family photos.
Nobody kind of brought the rings up because we were just all taking pictures and not really thinking about it.
It was only when they arrived at Kimball Terrace for the 4 p.m. ceremony that the couple realized the rings were missing.
I looked at my bridesmaids and I was like, oh, did anyone happen to pick up the rings? And nobody remembers seeing the box.
Last seen in the bride's hotel room, the rings could have been left behind or lost en route to the bridge or the ceremony site. In hopes of finding them, everyone, groomsmen, bridesmaids, and photo, video, and wedding planners, scrambled around town to find the little red box containing the two wedding bands. They searched the bridge, called the hotel and their shuttle service, but the rings were never found.
We actually had to use one of the groomsmen's rings for Colin, and then I wore my wedding planner's wedding band for the ceremony. The most important part was that him and I both walked down the aisle and both said yes.
After the ceremony, the wedding party decided to enjoy the reception. Melissa was hopeful someone would find the gold-rimmed ring box in their bag or stumble upon them while getting ready to check out of the hotel, but nobody did. So Melissa posted on Nextdoor and on KPCW's Lost and Found announcement service asking locals to help find the rings. Melissa's ring is a customized silver wedding band with a row of clustered diamonds from Baranoff Jewelers on Main Street. Colin's is a black gunmetal ring. Unfortunately, neither ring was insured. The couple is now enjoying a Dominican Republic honeymoon, but still hopes someone in Park City will find the rings and return them.
And if we get them back, it would honestly mean the world to us.
If anyone has information about the lost wedding rings, the couple can be reached through the KPCW Lost and Found service. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
And Park City hosting an array of activities to celebrate this Thursday. Every year, Park City Municipal hosts a variety of events marking Independence Day. Celebrations kick off at 8 a.m., as we mentioned, with the 5K Fun Run. This run has been held since 1984, and it helps support the athletes of Park City Ski and Snowboard. It's $30 to register for children, $50 for adults. Registration does close 5 p.m. July 3rd. The annual Rodney Shores Fallen Officer Memorial will take place on Main Street at 9 a.m., It honors fallen officers, and it gets its namesake from Officer Rodney Shores, who was killed by a drunk driver on July 4th of 1984 while directing traffic. After the memorial, the 419th Fighter Wing based at Hill Air Force Base will fly over Park City. That's happening at about 10:45, just before the parade, a 35-year tradition. Friends of the Library will also host their used book sale July 4th and 5th from 10 to 4 at the Park City Library. Bag happy hour again on Friday from 2 to 4 p.m., where visitors can fill a provided tote bag for $15. Friends of the Library members can go in early on Thursday from 8 to 10. And Park City Special Event Coordinator Heather Weinstock said one of the biggest events on the 4th of July is the parade. There will be 74 floats made by local businesses, organizations, and residents. Miles Rademan, Leadership Park City founder, will be the grand marshal during this 1.5-hour event.
He, you know, has done so much for this community, believes in loving where you live and digging in to make it even better. Over the past 35 years, he's done exactly that.
After the parade, from about 12:30 to 4 p.m., there'll be food trucks, rugby, music, and kids' game at City Park and the skate park. The final event on the 4th of July is the drone show at Park City Mountain. It'll begin at about 10 p.m. Locals can tune into KPCW to listen to music that will go along with the show. During the Independence Day events, there will also be some road closures. The City Park area will be closed for different activities in the area. Main Street will also be closed for the parade.
It'll be a hard road closure along that parade route, so starting on Sweet Alley, where we have all of the floats lining up, going down Main Street, down to Park Avenue. That'll be around 8 a.m. to about 1 p.m. or when the street is clear.
Parking in China Bridge will cost a flat rate of $30 until 1 o'clock, when parking will be free, but she encourages everyone to park at either Deer Valley Resort, Park City High School, or the Richardson Flat Park and Ride, and take public transit to reduce traffic.